Welcome to the Minor Consult, where I speak with leaders shaping our world in diverse ways. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Anne Wojcicki. Anne is co-founder and CEO of 23andMe, the pioneering personal genomics and biotechnology company. Over 18 years, Anne has been a leading voice in shaping the landscape for the direct-to-consumer genetic testing industry, helping people around the world learn more about their individual health and ancestral backgrounds. She's been named a Most Daring CEO by Fast Company and one of the world's most powerful women by Fortune. And she continues to shape the future of genomic research and healthcare. Anne, thank you so much for being here today.
Of course, I'm thrilled.
So maybe we could start by talking about your career journey. You and your two sisters built successful careers focused on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Mm-hmm. In addition to your role in leading 23andMe, your sister Susan was CEO at YouTube for nearly a decade, and your sister Janet is a doctor and professor. So Tell us about your upbringing. What prepared you and your sisters to pursue leadership positions in these fields?
That's a great question, and actually thankful to obviously where you are a significant leader at to Stanford. I had the pleasure of growing up on Stanford campus, and honestly, it was an incredibly privileged upbringing, and I was incredibly lucky to be surrounded by the Stanford community. Stanford really had a brilliant plan of actually having all the faculty live together, and so we were able to grow up in a very academic environment. I was surrounded by people who really pursued their passions, and it wasn't about the best economic pursuit. It was really about like what is it that captivated them. So there was no shortage of math professors and physics professors and people who would come and like I challenge gravity. People who were pursuing, novel ways of treating cancer and how do you manage pain. And, I was really lucky because it was really about that pursuit of a passion. And my sisters and I were really encouraged by both my mom and my dad to always love what we do. And if that involved, when we were little, we had a little lemonade business and we would go up and down the street and sell lemons. And, if that was our passion, that was great. And as we got older and I became passionate about traveling and my other sister was passionate, Susan actually worked for India Today as a photojournalist and she was passionate there. But my parents were always very supportive of passions, whatever they were. And frankly, it was like actually the whole community was supportive of passions. And in this idea as well is that you can constantly reinvent yourself. And I think that's one thing that you see actually at Stanford is like the faculty and the things that they can do and how they're constantly reinventing themselves and pushing themselves to do more and more. So I was really lucky and I give a huge credit to Stanford and the way we grew up and the community that we had and frankly that we still have today.
Well, it is a special community, and Anne, we're so pleased that you're still, in so many ways, a part of our community, and your work throughout your career has informed a lot of our thinking, and it's been a privilege and a pleasure to have you as a thought partner in so many ways. Now, you began your business career as an investment analyst, but you branched off in 2006 to co-found 23andMe. Now, founding a company is always a big decision. What made you decide to take that step? And did you have any inkling that the company would take off the way it did?
So we grew up with this world of passions, and I very randomly got into the investing world. And it was actually my dad who encouraged me to take the job, who was like, it's like totally different. Like, push yourself to do things that are completely out of your comfort zone. And I got this luxury of spending 10 years investing in healthcare companies. And I looked at everything from birth to death, whether that was, pediatric products to the entire funeral care industry, to how hospitals run, to how the insurance industry works. And I just it was an incredible pleasure. It was fascinating to understand the healthcare system. And I realized at one point that there's two things. One, there was this incredible opportunity with the genomic revolution, that learning your genetic risks opened up the door for you to have more personalized health. And you see this now with cancer treatments, where people learn their genetics and they understand better how to follow up with their, you know, with the right kind of treatment. And I looked at that with this opportunity really on prevention. If you understood what your risks were for breast cancer or colon cancer or heart disease, it would enable you to have a better, like, one, to be more proactive and to come in and you know, get follow-up and potentially change, you know, some of the prevention guidelines. I also saw this opportunity to crowdsource research. And that was really, I was very lucky to be surrounded by the early days of Google and to see sort of how they were, you know, like, you know, data at scale, and companies like Flickr and how they were actually able to, you know, it was the first example I saw of sort of the Web 2.0, that people were going to be socially connected online, and realized there was this incredible opportunity to do research in a large scale. And to me, there was nothing more fascinating than the human genome. Like, again, going back to those academic roots, is like, we have this code. It's so simple. Like, all of life comes from A, C, G, and T, like the base pairs of your genome. And you look at the wild representation, the fact that you are similar to, you know, a lizard and a banana, and you is like mind blowing to me. It's just like, I mean, there's so many parts of the world that are amazing. Like, my dad was particle physics, like, and I think about like particles and how it all came together and the origins of the universe. And then I think about life and DNA and the incredible diversity that we have. And I just want to understand it. And I felt like there was this opportunity to say, you know, if we want to understand the very basics of life, then, you know, you need to crowdsource it. You need to actually not have any one institution owning that kind of research project. You need this to be like actually a global effort. How are we going to get billions and billions of people involved in a collective pursuit of like, let's understand the code of life? So in 2006, we started the company. In part because I was really frustrated with the healthcare system as it is and wanted to empower people to, you know, frankly, just take more control of their health and actually have more control, more of an impact on the research world. And as scary as it was, because I had no real background in, you know, starting a company, again, going back to that idea of like passions and pursuit, this sense that, you know, you can figure things out and you can pursue it and you'll find support along the way.
From the start, 23andMe has been a pioneer in direct-to-consumer genetic testing. And how did you navigate growing a business that is continuously breaking new ground in the health and technology sector? And maybe you can talk about some of the, you know, some of the hurdles you had to overcome in those early days of the company.
Well, there were many hurdles.
Yep.
I could argue that we might still have some hurdles. okay, so first, the approach that we took was really, as you know, like contrary to how healthcare operates.
Yep.
You know, we designed a system that was entirely outside of the healthcare system. And in part, because again, like this is why it's an interesting conversation with you, because you are a leader in a major healthcare system. It's healthcare has a lot of incentives that are really hard to navigate. And I wanted something that was entirely about the individual and how do I create a viable business on keeping people healthy? And it's really hard. Like that's not part of the normal ecosystem. Like if it was, you know, keeping people healthier, like why doesn't the healthcare insurance world pay for people to have gym memberships and massage and meditate? Like it's really hard. So yep. The biggest challenge is that we are outside the system. We went direct to consumer. And I would say that was the most polarizing decision that we made, because traditionally healthcare products, especially new products, go through a physician order and they're part of the healthcare system. And we went direct to consumer. So suddenly people were walking into their clinicians' offices and saying, I'm a carrier for factor five, or I'm high risk for Alzheimer's, or I'm high risk for atrial fibrillation. What do I do? and clinicians are not trained on that, and the reimbursement system is not set up on that. So I would say, one, there was a real backlash from the clinical world, and I'd say then secondly, we had obviously major issues with the FDA in 2013, which frankly feels like a forever ago now.
Sure.
But it was a world where the FDA came and said, you need to prove that your test is accurate and that people can understand this. And I think one of the things I'm most proud of with respect to 23andMe is that we actually proved that the consumer is far more capable than a lot of people ever expected, that people can get very complicated genetic information and they can understand it, they know what to do with it, and they can actually make sense of it. And I think that, you know, one of the big questions that we have now is really, how are you going to get that information into the medical world? And I'd say, like, the controversy we have now, it's not even a controversy as much, but one of the challenges is there is a whole direct-to-consumer world that has been flourishing.
Sure.
And you see this with all the various online products. How do you have an intersection between the direct-to-consumer world as well as the traditional payer system world? And so those two worlds have not collided yet. And I think that's one of the interesting areas that will evolve over the next decade.
One of the challenges, and you just mentioned it and covered it, is that our knowledge of genomic data and its implications continues to grow on a weekly, if not daily, basis. You also mentioned in your previous answer, or in your previous discussion, that you know, physicians, most physicians today still receive their core training before the genome was mapped. And so ensuring an understanding of what the genomic code means, both for healthcare providers and for consumers, is a challenge for all of us. What's your thinking? You've obviously done a lot at 23andMe, and you have educational materials that you constantly update as we learn more. What's your thinking about this future and how we get a more mutually understandable knowledge set about the implications of what it means to have a variant in a particular associated with a particular condition? And how are you thinking about the entire educational process from consumer to healthcare provider?
Yeah, that's really the future. So I think about like our role. We have, you know, 15 million people who have been genotyped. So we're by far and away the largest community of individuals that have been genotyped that are, you know, and you know, a significant percentage of them have opted into the health side. So I have all these customers who have this information. And they're not, like, I can't get that information now into the clinical world, like into, so if you are a BRCA carrier and you're high risk for breast cancer, or you have familial hypocholesterolemia and you're very high, you need a statin, how can you get that information into the payer world and as part of their reimbursed system? And how do you make sure that their clinicians as well know what to do? So a couple years ago, we actually purchased a company called Lemonade. And part of the reason why we bought Lemonade was specifically because we wanted to have a clinical team that we could train on genomic medicine that could become experts in how to deliver the right kind of up-to-date information about what to do with this genetic data. And we brought in Dr. Nora Abul-Hassan, who came from Mount Sinai, who was leading genomic medicine there. And her job at Mount Sinai was really about how do you disseminate this information to all clinicians? How do you take somebody who's not trained in genomics to actually be able to understand this information and deliver it back? So Nora has been training our team. We have an incredible team of clinicians now. And what we think about is in the physician world, and again, this could be a live product session, you can give me the feedback. Clinicians are very used to having a consult. So, you know, you could be in pediatrics and you have a patient who's not growing, you call endocrinology, you say, okay, I need a consult. There's no difference here. A patient could come in and they say, hey, you know, I have had miscarriages and I'm a carrier for factor five. Is this potentially relevant? I need a consult. So we look at 23andMe as this opportunity to, one, we can inform the customer, which becomes a patient, the customer about what to do with this information. We can create materials that they can bring into the clinical world. And I think third, we can actually start to do physician-to-physician consults. And really help understand, like, what is the latest? What is that data? what can you do? So for instance, like I even just went to my dermatologist and I said, you know, I'm higher risk for basal cell carcinoma. There's data out there that 23andMe had surfaced to me about HPV vaccines, and she knew nothing about it. Mm-hmm. I then was able to actually give her papers about it, and we could then have a discussion. Again, I'm obviously a more sophisticated patient, but in that a situation like that, you could potentially have a specific physician consult. But 23andMe will also have that ability to deliver care. So for somebody who it's very much about the lifestyle, we see that there's this real opportunity for us to help coach people on prevention. And as you know, prevention is one of those areas in the healthcare system that all the healthcare providers want to do what's right by patients, but it is the poorest area of reimbursement. And that's an area I think that 23andMe can really help own, is saying, like, I can coach you. I can do things at scale that help look at all my customers who, you know, are higher risk for atrial fib or higher risk for a certain kind of condition, heart disease or diabetes, and I can help coach them and make sure that they then get to the clinician at the right time.
I think it's wonderful, Anne. And one of the reasons I always enjoy our conversations is you're so forward looking and you have so many great ideas about the future and what can be accomplished in the future. I was wondering, maybe continuing with that theme, I'd love to hear your thoughts on, because you're right. I mean, we have a great sick care system in the United States, an amazing sick care system. We do not have necessarily a great health care system, in particular when it comes to prediction and prevention. And of course, that's exactly what genetic testing offers us, as well as, for example, the information we get from wearables, where it's also been a challenge to get that information into the electronic health record, to communicate it to healthcare providers, to communicate it in a meaningful way to consumers that are using devices. What do you think needs to be done across the board? Because the technology is there, it's constantly evolving, and AI is going to accelerate that evolution for sure. But one of the real hangups is how to knit together the pieces, and then, if you will, get them into the workflow for the delivery of healthcare, and the workflow for each of us as an individual, as people interested in our health, of how we embrace this in our daily lives. I know there's a lot there, but I'd love your thoughts on maybe 5 to 10 years from now. What would you like to see that would leverage the information, the technology we have available today, better than we are right now?
Absolutely. I personally even feel this. There's an information overload. I have an Oura ring. I have my Apple Health Watch. I obviously have 23andMe's data. I've done CGMs. I do it all. And I have moments where I'm like, you know what? I don't want to wake up and see my sleep score. I know that I'm stressed. So I think that I think what people want, and people come all the time, is they want the ability to consolidate all this information into some way that makes sense for them. So 23andMe is really focused now on how do you actually bring all that data together? And because we have this longitudinal relationship with our customers, we can start to think about how do you take all these different data points and help people understand what are the behaviors they can change and what's the most likely next outcome. If I can look at all these things and say, you know, okay, you have a low HRV, you know, you're not sleeping well, you're not exercising and you're gaining weight, like you can then help coach people, say, hey, this is your potential trajectory. But if you made these changes, this is where your potential outcome could be. So we launched a product called Health Tracks, where we're actually helping people start to see what is their trajectory that they're currently on and what are those opportunities to be on different trajectories. And I think that kind of data would be really helpful for people to see, is like, where are you going and what could you potentially change? I think the thing that you brought up, which I think is really important, there has to be a partnership between the direct-to-consumer world and the medical payer world. Like, I personally find it's a tragedy that I have 15 million people who have, you know, a CF, a cystic fibrosis report, or factor five. Like, they have all this information and I can't get it into a medical record. Mm-hmm. So when we reached out to some of the medical record companies before, and, you know, obviously the largest is Epic, you know, they'd say like it's going to be 7 or 8 years before we could even entertain that kind of discussion. We've talked to a number of different groups. It is hard. There's no path. Like there's no data at Stanford, for instance. Like I couldn't even advise my customers to say, here's how you get your information into your Stanford. Right now it has to be a printout. So I think that is one of the most important ways. Like we have to pioneer a path where a consumer could put some kind of information in that the medical world is gating in some capacity. But like for us, we have 9 FDA authorizations. Like I have clinically validated, really medically meaningful information that should go, and we can give all of that. Then we could work with an institution, like we could work with Stanford. What is the potential guidance you give somebody who has an APOL1 variant and they're high risk for chronic kidney disease? There's absolutely things you can do, and that could be, you know, more aggressively monitoring their, you know, blood pressure, putting them on various medications, beta blockers, like a lot of things that you could potentially do that are both in a direct-to-consumer and an at-home environment as well as in a clinical environment. So that to me is like, I'm hopeful. I do see movement that there has to be some kind of integration of those two, but that like, honestly, like that's where like you and I, like we need to come together and say, how can we help? There's like millions, I mean, tons of people in the Bay Area who have that information, and I'm sure they would love to have it in their medical record. So I do think it's going to come, but it's also, as you know, it's overwhelming for clinicians. And I think that they're going to have to get very specific guidance about what to do. And that's where we want to be able to help all those clinicians out there know what are the latest thinkings in terms of, you know, evidence-based guidelines about what can you do when you have a genetic risk factor.
Your vision also includes drug development, and 23andMe has had an exclusive partnership with GlaxoSmithKline for 5 years, and it's now been extended another year on a non-exclusive basis. What has that partnership produced, and what role do you envision for 23andMe in drug development going forward?
Mm-hmm. So research, since we started the company, research has been a high priority for us. And again, it kind of came from the insight. Two insights. One, I was really impressed with the HIV community. And as you probably remember in the 90s, the HIV community had an incredible role in helping develop the therapies, staying actively involved, yes, changing the FDA. I mean, it was remarkable. And then you see other institutions like Livestrong, Susan G. Komen, all of the walks, the ribbons. Like the fundamental takeaway I had is that people want to be involved. Like no one wants to just sit there and wait for research to like come down. Like people want to do something. You get a diagnosis. You know, Francis Collins even came out in the Washington Post talking about his prostate cancer right, diagnosis and the importance of participating in research. Like all the things that come, like people want to give back. And I think it's a little bit of a tragedy I found is like how the research system works today, how you're treated as a human subject. You're kind of a specimen to be analyzed. It's not a fun process to be in a clinical trial. So how can you make research more engaging and more accessible? And so the idea was that you can crowdsource, like you can bring all these people together and you can make all kinds of discoveries. So 23andMe has this incredible research machine, and we can make discoveries on areas like you know, ancient DNA, where we can make all kinds of fascinating, you know, connections. We can make connections on like cilantro in your genetics. Like, why is that? You know, why do some people think it tastes like soap? Some people love it. Or really meaningful, like what are their genetic associations in, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and can we develop a drug for that? And then could you develop a companion diagnostic that's going to go with that drug? So we created this whole system for discovery, and that can benefit the consumer, can benefit research. So in 2000, or therapeutics, in 2015, we hired Richard Scheller, who was also a Stanford alumni, who spent 15 years at Genentech doing R&D. He joined 23andMe, and we started a therapeutics group, really with this hypothesis that by understanding the genetics, it's going to help give us better insights into biology so that then we can have a better prediction engine, essentially. We're still going to have failures, but we're going to be more likely to be successful. And there's all kind of data that's come out that's shown that you're, you know, 2 to 3 times more likely to be successful if you have a genetic foundation. So we started that. We did a large collaboration with GSK, and it was an incredibly successful collaboration. Over 50 programs came out. We're still working together. Once you start a program, it takes years and years to actually move those forward. They have signed on. They extended the collaboration for an additional year. They then signed on for an additional year for the 6th year. So it is a very extensive collaboration that we have with them, a huge number of programs. And it's really exciting what you can do right now with data. And just to emphasize, like, Stanford's obviously in the center of all of the AI world that's happening, but there's like a gold rush mentality with respect to how are you going to leverage all this healthcare data and can you make better sense of it and how to either help, you know, people understand how to predict disease and understand what the genome means, or can you actually better understand what is the right target and what is the right way to approach, you know, creating a drug for a specific kind of therapy.
So 23andMe celebrates its 18th birthday this year, and you've been its leader since the very beginning. What are you most proud of from your tenure as CEO?
Two things. One, I'm really proud. I feel like we represent the customer. We represent people in healthcare. And I think that healthcare in general has had this mentality that they need to be protected, that they're not capable of understanding, you know, medical information. And I think slowly over time, we've more and more given people a voice and understanding that they can actually understand this information and that they are far more competent and capable than we've ever expected. So that's one, is I'm always incredibly proud of how we advocated for the rights of an individual. And I think the direct-to-consumer path in healthcare is really important because it makes sure that things are always accessible to individuals. We're by far and away the lowest cost kind of genetic testing. Second, I'm really proud of the culture at 23andMe. I have an incredible team of people, and what we do is hard. It's really hard. And healthcare, as you know, is a beast of an industry. There are a lot of people who make massive amounts of money off the inefficiencies of the system. And at the end of the day, you're also managing people's lives. And it's really tricky. It's a really, really tricky business to be in, but it's by far and away also the most rewarding. And I am grateful to the people I've hired. And I think we've created a culture that is really fun, that really supports the employees and is incredibly mission driven. And to this day, we started with the mission, you know, help people. We help people access, understand, and benefit from the human genome. And we talk about that mission every day. Like every day, it's about like we are enabling that access. You know, we believe people can understand, and your future is about how you're going to benefit from the human genome. And it's really wonderful to work with a team of people who think all day long about what is the right thing to do. And after 18 years, I'm really impressed at like how much that mission has endured.
That's wonderful. Well, Anne, I want to end with two questions that I ask all my guests. First, what do you think are the most important qualities for a leader today?
At this point in time, it's perseverance. I think you have to love what you do. There are so many highs and lows running a company, and even in your position, you know this. There's like a lot of amazing things, and there's a lot of things that are really challenging. And so you have to be willing to stick it through. You have to love it. And the ability to stick with something, even when it's an awful time, is critical.
It's wonderful. I completely agree. And what gives you hope for the future?
I tell people all the time in the company, when we started 23andMe, gay marriage was illegal. And it's important for people to remember that because it shows how much the world can change. And and you talk about the challenges we had, things like our FDA warning letter and others, like you can create a different future. If you can envision something and you persevere, you can make it happen. And so the gay marriage is always just an example for people to remember that you, when you're consistently persevering a cause or a passion, you can make it happen. So that gives me hope, because I think that there's a lot of really positive changes happening. I think that in healthcare, healthcare is always complicated, but you have incredible treatments that have come in a lot of diseases. Like cancer has been, it's like revolutionized over the last 20 years. It's remarkable what has happened. There's a lot of exciting treatments there. And I think, honestly, the rise of direct-to-consumer and the ability for people to have access, and now this opportunity to really prevent disease, is, I think, extraordinary. And I'm grateful every day when we get messages on a daily basis from customers who feel like we've saved their life. And that's, it makes me really happy that there is an opportunity for us to get information, and it's not going to be information overload, but it's going to be life-changing.
Well, Anne, thank you so much. And thank you for listening to The Minor Consult with me, Stanford School of Medicine Dean Lloyd Minor. I hope you've enjoyed today's discussion with Anne Wojcicki, co-founder and CEO of 23andMe. Please send your questions by email to theminorconsult@theminorconsult.com. And check out our website, theminorconsult.com, for updates, episodes, and more. To get the latest episodes of The Minor Consult, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate the podcast 5 stars. Your feedback helps make this podcast happen. Thank you so much for joining me today. I look forward to our next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay well, and be kind.